It's like I'm having the most beautiful dream and the most terrible nightmare all at once.
Hey, you. Yes, I mean you, dear listener. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this Waro Desho podcast. We're so happy to have the pleasure of your company today. If you've listened to us before and like our show, you might be wondering how you could support us, since we won't take your money. This podcast will continue to be free, but if you'd like to show your appreciation, please consider leaving us a rating and review on iTunes, as those help our discoverability. If you don't use iTunes, that's fine too. You can follow us and like and share our content on SoundCloud, YouTube, and Twitter. Additionally, we love getting your feedback, positive or negative. Tweet us at WaroiDesho or email us at WaroiDesho@gmail.com. Whether or not it gets read on the show, I can assure you, we all read every tweet and email you send us. And once again, dear listener, we thank you so much. Now please, enjoy the show. Are we up and running? All right, I'm assuming that's a yes. Because the way I have the windows arranged, I cannot see what you
did. The smoothest entrance onto YouTube streaming ever.
Yeah! Let's make it even smoother, and let me just say, we're going to hit our theme music now. Welcome, ladies, gentlemen, and MBs, to Waro Desho's Stream of Thought, Banana Fish, Episode 3. We're doing this one a little bit off schedule. Apologies for that. Last Friday, I was not available. I was at the wrestling, and so I was unable to do our show. So we're doing the makeup stream Monday today. July the 23rd, and our usual time and place and what have you for the episode 4 stream remains intact. So if we're used to the Friday schedule, worry not. We'll be back for episode 4 on Friday. I am the subtle doctor. With me, a man who presses buttons as good as he smells.
That could be an insult or a compliment depending on what way you take it and what time of the day you might catch me. I mean, I try my hardest, but I'm not flawless.
Shadon, yeah, I'm here. King of Manchester.
I wouldn't put it out like that. By the way, folks, because no doubt people are going to notice it, technically this is a three-person show, say, because why, yes, the zit on my head.
Come on.
Look at it. It's really noticeable. Hey, I thought, you know what, right? I thought I'd just at least point out before someone goes, wait a minute, what happened? Was he attacked by, like, a giant horsefly or something? And maybe that happened while I was asleep, I can't say. But, hey, there you go, it's here. So, yeah.
Boo your terrible self-deprecation.
It's fine. It's
exactly,
fine.
It is fine.
I don't give a shit. But... Well, I will say I need to just actually do some quick housekeeping here, some serious and some less so serious. So we'll start the serious first, which is just to address very briefly something happened in the Frank Street of Thought recently. It's been pointed out to me today, which was that terminology. So I use a term which is no longer, how should we say, kosher. to describe the nine, specifically the fact they were intersex. I didn't use the word intersex. All I can say is that now I know. I was not aware. I should have been. It's not an excuse. You know, take away from me saying that doesn't, you know, make it better. But I apologize. I'm sorry that happened. And going forward, now I know, I'll make sure it doesn't happen again. But this is the thing, like, I'm glad at least people are reaching out to us and telling us when we're doing wrong here. Like, I'm not going to be one of those people who's like, you know, well, sod you for not liking what I had to say just because I said it in the moment. Like, no, I'd rather you actually, you know, people tell me and educate me on this kind of stuff. So
you're not going to get mad and be reactionary about it?
No, I'm not, actually. I'm surprised. I know. I'm as surprised as you are.
I thought
honestly.
I knew you.
Well, that's alternate, you know, timeline version of me, where I did become a YouTube reactionary. Maybe the zits might count for that. I don't know. I mean, it seems kind of coincidental. Shout out to John for contacting us and telling us about that. I appreciate, you know, people taking the time to inform us about it. I am sorry about that. I will not do that again. Simple as that. So that's
thank
the first
you, John. Thank you, John.
Yeah, thank you. The second bit of housekeeping I want to do is just something that I find very funny, actually, and this is just a quick shout out to Amazon of all people. So Banana Fish is, of course, streaming on Amazon at the moment in the Noitamina block. And if there's one thing I've said before about Amazon, is that Amazon's UI and user experience for looking at streaming video of any sort, be it anime or be it, you know, regular television, is, how do I put this mildly? It's catastrophically shit. It's pretty bad. And I'll tell you this, right? I don't know if this particular show is available on US Amazon Prime, but there is a kids TV show here that's quite well known in the United Kingdom called Bananas in Pajamas. So imagine this scenario, if you will, right? Run this by me. Let's say you're a parent and you've got Amazon Prime and you let your kids have an Prime access, you know, so they can watch kids TV because there is kids selection on there. And, you know, they look up Bananas in Pajamas and they get that and then they start going through the related content and they end up on Banana Fish. Because this is the thing, right? When I type in Bananas in Pajamas, I didn't type that in. I'm not watching that. That was the toilet.
Mom, what happened to Skip?
Oh, this is the thing, right? This is the thing. Like, I typed in Banana Fish and that came up, like, as a suggestion. So, nice for Amazon. You could very well end up having some poor five-year-old, you know, thinking he's going to watch Bananas in Pajamas doing goofy shit, you know, like kids-related stuff. And instead they're going to end up, you know, with, well, the prison episode of Banana Fish, or any episode of Banana Fish for that matter. And
which, according to certain YouTube luminaries, will turn them gay. Just so you know. Yep, that's what'll happen. That's how it happens.
Man, YouTube luminaries, like, I remember, just to the side, like, I remember seeing once, because algorithms and all, like, had Franks-related stuff coming up on my YouTube suggestions all the time, and I had one around episode 14 of Franks. I never brought this up in the actual studio before, but I just need to mention that it said Ichigo is the worst character in the show, or something to that effect, as far as the actual title of the episode, and the thumbnail was Fought or Not.
Oh, which, I watched that nonsense, yes.
Why?
It wasn't even, like, just clickbait, man.
That, I mean, the thumbnail alone just to me said, right, ain't touching that of a 10-foot barge pole. This is, you know, 15 minutes of my time I could spend doing literally anything else. Yeah. I could have spent it sniffing glue and it would have been less damaging for me. So there we go.
Yeah.
But yeah, shout out to Amazon for, you know, continues to have a user experience on the level of, you know, what was it, teletext.
They need
United
to,
Kingdom.
Like, I don't know how it is in other countries, but, like, they don't have, I don't want to start a giant debate with this, because I don't think anime is a genre, but, like, they don't have an anime genre tag like Netflix does, which makes it super easy to, you know, click a button, and then you just are looking at all the anime. And you're not getting, occasionally, like, they'll categorize stuff wrong, but, like, that's a different thing. Like, with Amazon, it is, you have to know what you're looking for. There's no way to be like, what, at least, you know, now that Anime Strike is no more, I can't really find a good way to, you know, celebration. I can't really find a good way to, like, to do that, to like click a button or go funnel down with facets into some category to just see anime. I mean, you can do animation, but like there's just so much shit that,
yeah, I mean, you know, maybe I am oversimplifying the example I gave before, but I just found it amusing because I thought, well, some poor kid's getting scarred for life.
It could happen.
I just found the concept funny. It was, well, stuff happens in Banana Fish, particularly in this episode, that is definitely not for, you know, people who are not legally able to buy cigarettes or alcohol, for that matter. It's definitely on the mature side of the consent. So, yeah. Alright, so let's actually start summarizing Banana Fish episode 3.
Let's launch into Banana Fish. But before we get to episode 3, just to tie up the loose ends on episode 2, can you address the Twitter poll from last week and give us the results?
Yes, I can. Right, where is it?
We'll have a new poll up at some point during the episode this week.
I apologize, folks. I had this up, but it seems to have disappeared from my Swiss, which is really irritating.
No worries. And you'll have like a week to respond, and I'm sure it'll be some inane poll like, you know, should Eiji stick to wearing his jacket one shoulder down? Because I think he should.
Totally, I do have things to say about that jacket, but it's actually totally enough. Okay, so we had two polls last week.
Okay.
Which was that, were you surprised they died in episode 2? Can we take the spoiler tag off that and say who it actually is?
We can, yes. Yes.
That would be Skip. Well, I mean, mentioned it before, actually. But yeah, Skip, unfortunately, bit the bullet. Were you surprised? 69%, nice, said
nice.
Yes. 31% said no. And then we asked later, who has the better jacket? That'd be Kaiji from Kaiji, or Eiji from Banana Fish. I nearly said Eiji then, but I shouldn't do that. And in the end, 59% said that Eiji had the better jacket, at least in the OP. The one he's got in this
recency
episode...
Recency bias?
Possibly? Maybe? But the one in this episode, like, it's an alright jacket, but, well, conspicuous is not even half the word that I would use to, you know, talk about it.
And those pants. Those are some kick-ass pants he's wearing.
Do you reckon Eiji was like doing one of those things where he wanted to make himself circle background?
No.
Like
I think he was trying to be inconspicuous. I think he was like, I have to go to Chinatown, so I need to dress like I'm from the streets. And so he went to like some kind of something on the corner and picked up some cool kid clothes.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with the outfit he's wearing, of course, but
no.
I have to say, you know, if you want, like, he's just literally had a message from Ash saying, like, tell no one of this, go and speak to, he's like, okay, should I, you know, dress conservatively, you know, try and blend in, you know, not stick out, or should I, you know, go full Joseph in his technical dream coat? So, there's a time and a place for it. This was probably not it, as we will later learn when we get to the ending of the episode. But the beginning is probably a very good place for us to start, so let's start there.
By the way, the next poll will be, was Eiji trying to be inconspicuous in episode 3? Yes or no?
Oh, wait. maybe he's trying to do both. Maybe he's thinking to himself, you know what, okay, I'm going to try and be inspicuous, but I want a great outfit for after this is all over with. Like, you know,
don't want to just have to throw it away.
No, why should you?
Oh, okay, my God. So... Alright, yeah, let's start the summary of and run down episode 3.
Okay, so this is episode 3. What was the title again? I believe it was Across the River and Amazon Cuts Off an Ellipsis. That's what it handed.
Across the River into the Trees.
Into the Trees, there we go. Was that a line from Salinger's novel?
I'm going to look it up right now.
Because I get the feeling these are all, like, excerpts from the novel itself. I mean, Perfect Day for Banana Fish was episode 1, of course, and that was an excerpt. This one...
It is an Ernest Hemingway book. I don't know if, like...
Oh.
If there's sort of a, like... 20th century American writer or 19th, you know, type thing. Well, it is 20th century. That book was published in 1950. I like to use the internet wrong sometimes. Yeah, I don't know if this is intentional or like you said, if this was some sort of line or chapter from the Salinger book. Perhaps listeners can do our work for us and tell us the answer.
Are we crowdsourcing now?
Always. We are always.
Fair enough.
This is a live show. There's no time for research while recording to be edited out later, so we're going this route.
We're just, you know, making up as we go along. So, okay, prison. Of course, like, end of the previous episode, Ash ended up in prison. And, you know, Charlie and the others, like, they all had a plan to basically make sure he was looked after while he was in there, while they tried to figure some way of getting him out. And this involves one of the best name characters in fiction ever, Max Lobo.
Fantastic.
I still love that name. Now, I'll spoil this ahead of time. If you're thinking to yourself, wait a minute, where have I seen Max before? He was in the opening prologue of the show in Iraq. And I had completely and utterly forgotten this, and maybe that's just because of my incredibly poor attention span, possibly. But, like, he was, of course, there when Ash's brother, Griffin, you know, got high, probably not for his own fault, and then, you know, ended up killing all of the other soldiers there. So, bear that in mind for later, because that's going to become important in a quite pivotal scene. But, yes, Charlie and AG meet with Max in prison, because he's there himself for apparently punching a cop, I believe.
That is correct.
And they say to him, right, you need to, like, we want you to look after him, keep an eye on, make sure he doesn't get into trouble, because, you know, everyone will be, like, out for him, because, well, he's Ash Lynx, like, people know who he is, and, you know, he looks appealing to that kind of people, so, you know, that's the thing. So, we have the OP, then we click back, and they end up actually meeting Ash and Max, and Ash is asking asking a lot of questions, are you? Like, immediately suspicious of him, but Max is of course very friendly, and they actually mention as well, like, about the fact that he was a journalist, and Max did a number of columns,
as well as like reporting on the war. My question is, and maybe they address this in the comics, but pretty lucky they ended up in the same cell, right? I mean, was that the cops calling in a favor? I would imagine
Possibly.
It was very fortunate that, like, the guy that they wanted to watch out for, Ash, you know, oh, we're cellmates, you know, it's like, that's, but it's very believable to me that, yeah, they just called in a favor.
We're prison buddies, basically. Mm-hmm. If there's one impression I got of Max in this particular early part of the episode, is that he did not strike me as being, like, he's a big bloke, obviously.
Right.
But his mannerisms were very soft, and I thought to myself, I don't think people are going to be that dissuaded, you know, like, by Max looking after him. Like, if people wanted to go for Ash, and yes, they do, then, well, I don't think he's going to stop them, or at least, you know, shake them off or scare them off by doing so.
They just throw shit at Max on a regular basis.
I mean, hell, he gets verbally demolished by Ash inside the cell when he, you know, insults his writing. And, well, that's the end of Max's psyche at that point. It's been, you know, taken apart. But Max is kind of taken aback himself by Ash in that he had him down as a street hoodlum, you know, a random, you know, no-lifer. But he's very obviously very well educated and very well read.
Yeah.
So, Max at later point warns Ash, like, you know, that young guys like him are seen as dolls, they're playthings essentially. Which, well, I've seen American History X. It's not implausible that there could be that kind of culture in certain prisons. I mean, this was the '80s as well in America. I admittedly am speaking out of ignorance here, so I won't pretend like that's universal or that's always been the case or it's been displayed here. But, well, Ash was put in here for a reason, and people were contacted to, you know, work him over while he wasn't here by Dino.
Yes.
So it's not a warning without, you know, merit. And then there's lunch. And Ash is just, of course, you know, looking and thinking, oh, I wouldn't feed my dog this. I mean, to be fair, it is prison. I'm not expecting, you know, the food to be, you know, superb and all that. But while, you know, Max and Ash are talking at the lunch table, we, of course, meet the snake that we saw in the previous episode. His name was Garvin?
Garvey.
Garvey, yeah, Garvey. I almost misheard that as Garzy then, and I'm like, nope, let's not talk about that. Let's
Garvey's about wing.
Garvey's prison wing.
So we got, as far we got our in our rogues gallery of shitheads, Marvin and Garvey. See, even I fucked it up.
Is this turning into the Three Stooges? Just like, you have to take them dead seriously, and they're all horrible people. Wow, I don't know. Like they are, either that or they sound like, you know, musicians from a barbershop quartet. And that's the kind of name I'd expect them to have. I don't
Prison.
Know. Indeed. So, Garvey sits down and he starts talking to Ash, saying, hey there, good looking. Why don't you come by my cell? And then he reaches over and touches Ash's hand, which, well, I'd have rather, you know, put my hand in the bear trap than do that in his shoes, but in the first place. But it's not exactly a smart move. So, Ash, having seen, you know, or read Watchmen, remembers, you know, what happened with Rorschach in the prison and figures to himself, no, you know what, you are locked up in here with me, not vice versa, dickhead, and then kicks him in the face. So a fight breaks out, as you'd expect. Max calls on a guard to intervene before things get out of hand, which is not what I expected. I mean, like, in prison, usually telling on the guards, like, is a, you know, bit of a thing.
Yeah. But
what I thought to myself, I was watching this episode, it's like, oh, now he's been isolated. There's nothing he can really do here to resist that won't get him into trouble either now or down the line. I'm not referring just to the guards, because obviously, you know, some of the guards probably won't take, or, I mean, turn a blind eye. So it's a really, like, there's no win scenario here. There's nothing he can do. Like, I certainly don't blame him for fighting back at that point. I wouldn't have had, you know, Garvey laying a fucking finger on me in any day of the week, no matter what I might follow next. But hey, so while that's all happening, and, you know, Ash is in the hot box, you know, humming do 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 do, and just throwing a baseball at the wall.
Did you ever see the movie? It was sort of a B movie, Undisputed, with Wesley Snipes.
No,
and
I feel like I
think,
should, though.
I think maybe, oh gosh, why am I forgetting it? Ving Rhames was in it as well, I believe. And it was
good old Ving Rhames.
Good old Ving Rhames. It was about underground, illegal, like, prison bare-knuckle boxing. And Wesley Snipes was, like, the undisputed, hence the title, champ.
Oh, of course.
And they were trying to, like, throw him off mentally before a match, I believe. And they put him in solitary, but he managed to smuggle toothpicks in. And when they came to get him and open the door, the solitary confinement chamber door, he had built, like, this massive city of toothpicks that was just had all this intricate detail. It was like, he's like, I'm chill, dude. I'm cool. Let's go.
Okay. I mean, what is the is he undisputed boxer, or is he undisputed,
yes,
like, you know, toothpick city builder here? It's not quite clear to me from the synopsis. I'll have to check on IMDb later. But anyway, so while that's all happening, you know, Ash is just scratching, like, you know, right, 10th time I've been in here on the wall. We cut, of course, back to the doctor that he met previously, who's been doing more analysis of the banana fish drug. The things that he's noted here is that apparently it's basically LSD, but it's not, because it exhibits a lot of particularly aggressive behaviors in the people who take it,
right,
psychopathic violent tendencies, which are not associated with LSD. Full disclosure, I have never taken it, so I can't comment.
Same.
Nor am I judging do, so I'll leave that there. But the immediate thing that I thought of on this subject is, like, wait a minute. Testing military environment, psychopathic aggressive tendencies. I'm like, wasn't this a plot point in Max Payne, I wonder? I mean, this is New York, after all.
Yes.
It is. So, Ash, while he's in the hot box, of course, takes five to, you know, consider his options and decide what he's going to do. And naturally, of course, caged animal, he wants to get out. But he doesn't just want to get out of prison. He wants to escape from Dino permanently. Indeed, we get a little flashback very briefly of when Dino first took him in, and Ash looks, well, I mean, apart from the fact, obviously, he was 10 and is now, you know, old enough to ride the roller coasters at, you know, Disneyland. he looks like a completely innocent, like, untouched person. Like, he's never, when I say that, I mean, like, he's never, you know, known violence or known criminal life. But untarnished is the word I would use. Very different person from who we have today. So
I think that seems very important, and I'll touch on that later.
Indeed. So everyone's clear. Ash is eventually let back out, and then he's in the exercise yard.
I love his line, by the way, when they're when he gets let out, and you know, he goes to paint with Max, and he says something like, "Max, like, oh, you look fine for a kid who is thrown in solitary to repent for a whole night." And he says, "I never repent." That made me happy.
There's more meanings that I say as well, actually, in the, well, we'll say later, but I think that, you know, at least Ash is, you know, for all the stuff that he's been through that we know of and can extrapolate from and imagine, that he at least recognizes it's not his fault. Because it isn't. None of it is. It's just the unfortunate hand he's been dealt with, and he's trying to work his way, you know, to the top of the table to deal himself out. But it's not happening yet. So back in the exercise yard, you know, King Bastard and his two cronies, Garvey, turn up and take him to the library. And no, they're not, you know, going to be study partners, unfortunately. I'll save my thoughts on this scene later, but again, if this show is doing something really well, it's leaving things up to the viewer's imagination so they can extrapolate the awful, you know, things that happen to Ash, rather than making it definitive. Things that, you know, are ill-defined sometimes can be the most terrifying, because you'll immediately cut to the worst possible time, and it'll be tailored to you, personally. So, yeah, when I saw Ash after the fact, you know, mostly naked, tied up, beaten half to death, my mind started going into places, and I was like, no thanks, that's fucking grim. That shit.
And then, you know, Garvey says, you know, chuckling, like, this kid knows how to survive in this world. And he was very obedient, like, it was all, boy.
Yeah.
I mean, just feel for the kid, even though, you know, just to be put in that position, right, where you have to feel like, or where you, parentheses, Ash, feel like, okay, in order to, like, make my way in here and not die, possibly set up connections, possibly get favors, get messages to people outside, or protect people that I care about, you know, I have to do this, undergo this, this violent, like, abuse. It's pretty, it just gives you a real sinking feeling in your stomach.
Yeah. Oh, dear. But he is, of course, all right for what it's worth. Like, they take him to see the, you know, the prison doctor, the prison sawbones. Max is giving him some food. Like, by the way, Ash specifically asks for a tablet, a capsule, as a painkiller.
Mm-hmm.
But because he's already got a plan in mind, palms it aside, smuggles it away. This is also where we get to see some of the show actually trying to throw some levity in, surprisingly enough, with its animation, which I'm not so sure about. I mean, I only saw this about half an hour ago, so I'm probably going to need more time to let it sell, but I remember in Ancient Mage's Bride, I was a bit iffy on, you know, the chibi-related stuff that followed certain scenes in which they should be dealing with, you know, the gravity of the situation that just happened. Then again, maybe this is meant to be, you know, the, a signifier that Ash, you know, just, that's just how he copes with it. I don't know. I'll save that for later, I'll save that for later, but I am a slightly iffy on its usage. Especially, I mean, I imagine, like, it exists in some form in the manga, of course. But to see it fully animated like this...
So remind me what you're referring to specifically?
When he's eating the banana and then, you know, the banana start flying.
Oh, right, and he, like, tries to get the banana and, yeah, the fork.
Yeah,
I mean, I think it might even just underscore the sadness of it. That, I mean, this has been his world for 6 years, like, to be used by people in this way, and have his agency and his will and his humanity stripped from him, you know, for the pleasure of others. Like, and the fact that he's not, like, you know, weeping in a corner, he's not, like, gone stone silent from the trauma. He's just, like, as you say, survival mechanisms kicked in. Like, this is, yeah, this has been a part of his life for so long, and it's, that's just tremendously sad.
It is, but I think that this early in the show, maybe doing that undersells, like, downplays it a little for the audience as well. Like, I don't know.
I see. I see where you're coming from. I know what you mean.
I don't know. I feel slightly iffy on it, but anyway, we'll figure this out later. Mm-hmm. So, back in their cell, Max and Ash are comparing notes, almost literally, actually, because Ash is actually reading through Max's journal, or his own, possibly. And they eventually, after a lot of conversation, come to a couple of realizations about each other, not least of which is that, one, Ash learns that Max was in Iraq, in Baghdad, when the whole thing with banana fish went down. In fact, the reason this happened is because, absentmindedly, while eating the banana in the hospital, in the doctor's room, Ash says banana fish out loud, and Max, obviously, you know, I mean, he knows he's well read, but, like, the fact that he mentioned that specific thing that he's familiar with, no, that's too much coincidence. I mean, like, Max may come across as, like, you know, a bit soft. He might come across, like, you know, a bit too pleasant for a prison environment, but he's certainly not dense. He recognized immediately that, okay, that's too much coincidence. I gotta press my... So eventually, they learn everything about each other that's relevant, like, that Max knew Griffin. Max was there when he saw everything go down. They exchange proper names, like Ash. It turns out his first name is Aslan, which, I mean, we've already got Salinger in here, and now we've got C.S. Lewis.
Right, that's interesting.
That can't be a coincidence that you would go with that specific name. I'm not buying it. I'm really not buying it that literally Aslan was the most random name picked out, because, like, well, let's just put it this way. If Dino ends up, like, you know, starts eating Turkish Delight at any point, I'm going to pause the episode when that happens and just go take a breather for 5 minutes.
And his last name, you know, is another big cat. You know?
There you
not go, a lion, but a lynx. It's close enough to be related, but not on the nose.
Yeah. Well, the on-the-nose allegory, I suppose, is that since Aslan was essentially, at least in the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, was Christ allegory.
Yep.
So, Ash Christ allegory, suffering for the sins of man, etc., etc. There could be things to this, maybe, as the show goes along. I'm not going to cast judgment right now, because, you know, we are only 3 episodes in, but something to bear in mind, perhaps...
Now, I have to break it, the allegory.
Oh, dear.
Jesus did not saw off his pistol. Jesus' pistols were fully standard factory, like, he didn't have to sand the serial numbers off of them. He just brandished them off the assembly line.
Are you sure, though? Because Jesus was a carpenter, so he would have the tools and the weapons to do it.
He made his own bullets. He kept the gun standard. That's the version I know. Tweet us your version at Warrior Show.
Yeah, Judas, I've got 30 pieces of silver for you right here, and they're loading this fucking AR-15. How do you like that, you son of a bitch?
This is where Cartophilius comes in, right?
Something like, is this like our own, but like, this feels like the Quentin Tarantino version of The Last Supper.
Dude, what if he made that? That would kind of rule.
I would be entirely all right with that.
And, but, like, we'll the apostles were... It was just organized crime. And, you know, Christ is the crime boss. Oh, that'd be kind of interesting.
Well...
Maybe, just to me.
Well, Quentin Tarantino, if you happen to be watching this stream before, please at least give us partial credit and some cash for inspiring you to do The Last Supper in the style of Reservoir Dogs.
Yes.
I just say, like, you know... Well, I mean, Jesus obviously would be Mr. White in that case. But anyway, let's move on. So, after all that, Ash actually turns on Max at the point. Basically, Fez, as soon as I'm out here, I'm going to kill you.
Whew.
And
cold, man. Cold.
Yeah, that's... I mean, I feel for Max in this, and I feel for Ash, like, because Ash is obviously, you know, he has the perspective, but at the same time, he's lived with Griffin, you know, in his state, in his, you know, drug-induced stupor, like, where he's barely even coherent anymore, barely even awake. So having someone be reductionist about what happened to him and saying, like, he went crazy and killing all these people, it's not fair. But it is also true. And sometimes the truth can be hard to swallow. And I think taking out Max is also a bit unfair of him, but at the same time, I think Griffin doesn't actually really mean to kill him after the facts. Sorry, Griffin, Ash, I mean to say, sorry. Ash doesn't mean to kill him after the facts. Probably more something said out of anger, I would say, at the time. But anyway, so...
You mean a 17-year-old doesn't... Is a word is not ironclad?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I mean, I get the impression that Ash is probably more polite than your average Fortnite player. Especially when things are going badly. But at the same time, I don't think he genuinely meant it. Oh,
Max.
Hello, Luther.
Build the stairs. Build the stairs. Hello again, Luther.
Hello, Luther. So, after all that, we then go back to, you know, the communal area where the public can come in to meet people. Max is now sat on an entirely different table from Ash. And he's speaking with, I can't remember the ginger guy's name, I think it is Charlie, actually.
It is Charlie.
Saying, you know, I can't do this anymore, it's not right, it's not good for me, it's not good for him. Meanwhile, Ash is speaking to AJ. And this leads to, well, I'm glad it, like, you know what? It was going to happen eventually. The pretext is for this happening is, of course, different. But yes, they do end up kissing here. Ash actually stands up, says, thanks, sweet, and kisses him full on. Like, we even get to see tongue, like, and everything. This is full on. Which is cool and all, but it's actually got a hidden purpose to it, which is to pass AG the capsule that he pawned before from the doctor. Now, if you're thinking, you know, like, that he's just giving him, you know, something to relieve his headache or something, that's not the case, because AG actually goes to the bathroom, to the washroom.
He knows.
And he knows, yeah. He knows that that's in his mouth. So then he...
Thank God he just didn't swallow it.
Yeah. I know, like, that would have been unfortunate, wouldn't it? Can I get a glass of water? And then Ash just looks back and he's just like, no, don't do it. So it turns out that Ash, because he's, like, seriously, like, the guys who escaped from Alcatraz ain't got shit on him. They ain't got shit on Ash. He's actually put a little message inside the, like, plastic shell of the capsule after scooping out all the, you know, the drugs and whatever inside of it. And it gives instructions for AG to go to Chinatown and meet with a shorty, was it?
Shorter.
Shorter. Mm-hmm. Shorter. Supposed to be with Shorter. And not to tell anyone about it. So, I have to say, by the way, Ash doing that in public spectacle where everyone could see him, that, like, maybe there could have been other ways. Possibly, I mean, I've never escaped from a prison in my life, nor tried to pass messages in it, so I can't really comment on this. But doing that when he's literally already been, you know, assaulted by, you know, Garvey and all of his cronies, it's probably the bullseye on him. So, wow. Like, again, Christ thing, you know, that is merely a very broad thing to say, but, you know, like, taking an injury to get the broader message across, that kind of thing.
Hmm.
So,
are you saying we're going to have another stream of thought with an anime Jesus?
I'm entirely okay with this anime Jesus.
Yes, I like this one too.
Yeah, because you know what? He's an asshole, but at least you know he's an asshole with a heart, as opposed to the cavernous MC, you know, black hole that was inside Hero, also which also had an IOU spinning it as well. IOU, one good character arc by the writers. I knew
they'll fix it in the Blu-ray.
well, thank you for chiming me in, Luther. There you go. Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, Ash would not... I imagine, like, you know, doing it that publicly would be something he would be aware of.
He's a calculating man. Sense. I mean, he's a gang leader, you know, like, very savvy. Has managed to not die in the last 6 years, so, yeah.
Yeah, he's done all right. So... AG and his friends, like, they all return back to New York, and he decides to head out alone to go and head to Chinatown and go find Shorter. Back at Dino's mansion, We get to meet, of course, Arthur again, and every time I see him, his hair just turns more and more into looking like Dio's from Part 3. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong. You're entirely right.
I mean, when he just literally appears later on, if you told me there was just like a little temporal discontinuity before then, I'd believe it. Like, I reckon Arthur might very well just actually be Dio. We see him fighting with knives, after all, in the OP. Just saying. It's not impossible. So, because the villains in this show are also not idiots, refreshingly. that's actually something I've genuinely been impressed by. Like, mm-hmm. They're on the ball with trying to figure out what's happened to the drugs. Like, they're not fumbling around in the dark. They, even though Ash has done everything he can to keep, you know, the message out there, a secret that AJ needs to go to Chinatown, the fact that he still did that with AJ, met him, was noticed and paid attention to, and they know Ash well enough to know that why would he meet some random Japanese kid out of nowhere? This is suspect. We should probably follow him. And, well, AJ then decides, you know what? Sting, did you say? The guy who played Fade Rotha in the Dune film by David Lynch. And, of course, the singer from The Police. Man.
I can totally see it now.
That's amazing, because, firstly, it is more JoJo's than
you
realize, given it is literally...
super JoJo's!
It's literally based off a singer.
Yes!
Man. Now I'm just thinking of like his performance in June, and well, June's a weird fucking. Anyway,
thank you, Luther.
Thank you for that bit of trivia there. That's excellent. So, all right then. So yes, Dino and Arthur and his other colleague are there talking about and say, right, we're going to go follow AJ, and AJ decides, you know what, I'm going to go shopping. And this is what we said before about him deciding to be inconspicuous by being visible from space.
I'm convinced he did not own those clothes beforehand. There's no fucking way.
No, he was shopping. He was looking around.
Yeah.
And so, not only... What I love about this is not only...
From space. Just imagine.
Houston, I mean, there's a new object that's appeared on Earth's surface in New York City. Over here are the coordinates.
That's
okay. It's just a Japanese man wandering through Chinatown. Over.
I mean, not only is he wearing, like, this incredibly, like, you know, visually bright and colourful purple jacket and pants with glasses, he's wearing one of the arms, like, slung off his shoulder. And, like...
It's very, like, Bret the Hitman Hart, a wrestler from the 90s and 80s as well. He had these badass leather jackets, but always kind of fling them back and have the shoulders exposed.
I just like it's perfect. The thing is, like, again, this is not a bad thing. This is perfectly in character him. It continues to build on the idea that he's in a world he has next to no idea about, and he's completely, you know, sheltered. So I appreciate them doing this, and it did get a genuine chuckle out of me.
That's great. Hello, so... street hoodlums. I'm looking for an illicit location. Can you direct me to said hideout? I am one of you, as you can tell by my fat, you know, duds. Is that what you call these duds? Am I... Hello? Are you...
Why are you bringing out the black bag? I didn't answer the black bag. Can you please not put the black bag on my head?
I am obviously one of you.
This is entirely inconvenient. I cannot see the street before me.
Continue with the hip-hop and the breakdancing.
But how will I know where we're going if you put the black bag over my head? Like... Okay, so yes, he ends up going to a restaurant and ends up meeting someone named Chang, who is possibly the restaurant owner, says, where is Shorsa? And Chang says, oh, he's not here, sorry about that. But unfortunately, AJ, you know, having never played Metal Gear Solid in his life, or having never, you know, heard the phrase loose lips sink ships and all that, starts speaking out loud about, you know, the doctor. And so he goes to visit the doctor, and who would be waiting for him there but fucking Arthur. And, well, Banana Fish, you know, continuing its tradition thus far of ending on a cliffhanger of, you know, poor little AJ in, you know, being grasped by Arthur, and you think to yourself, oh boy, this is going to be a baptism by fire. Great. Marvelous.
All I can think of when I hear that guy's name, by the way, is the meme, the Arthur meme. The closed fists. But so Chang is interesting because, like, I mean, it looks like he's very aware that the person sitting, you know, at the back of the restaurant is following Eiji, or at least is a shady character up to no good. So he's not about to be like, oh, I'll tell you where Shorter is, sure. And, you know, he probably doesn't trust Eiji necessarily either, but I think he's, like, is very aware of what he's doing.
Oh, absolutely. I get the impression that Chang is definitely, you know, certainly more informed than he was letting on. Like, there's no way he would randomly come up to, like, you know, Eiji out of nowhere and just, like, you know, start talking to him like that. Like, it could have been anyone. So, yeah. But that's the episode. A lot of stuff happened in it again, like, man. Banana Fish has not let up thus far. Like, it's kept its pace. And I'm still not entirely sure if that's what it's detriment or not, because I am, like, I had completely forgotten who Max was until we got signposts and reminded of that, which I'm grateful that the manga and the show subsequently did. But I can't help but feel that perhaps, and I again am speaking to possibly my terrible attention span here, not necessarily the fault of the material, but I can't help but feel like, you know, there was so much happening, I'm going to potentially lose track of certain details I should keep an eye on. But I'm also not complaining, you know, there's plenty of going on and everything's interesting to take in. So that's certainly good.
Yes. All right, I'll let you take a breather and I'll lead off with our
talking points.
So, the first thing that stuck out to me this episode was, and I mentioned a particular shot sequence when you were giving the summary, and so I'll touch on that. It was the really oppressive, stifling feeling of just being smothered by the control of other people was ever present throughout this episode. I mean, it takes place in a prison, of course, a place where your freedom, you know, has been stripped from you, all your items, you know, your day, everything is monitored. But there were a couple of parallel shots that I thought really, like, drove this home. During the flashback when Dino is approaching Ash for what looks like one of the first times, and he grabs, you know, he grabs him by the chin to hold him up to look into his face. And then at the end, Arthur does the same thing to Eiji, and he says, you know, hello, samurai boy. And that was a nice parallel, like, that these two are now, like, they can't escape. They're now, like, under the cloud of the mob, of this Dino's kind of criminal organization. And, you know, you get that whole thing where Ash, you know, was so, like, inspired by the pole vaulting, you know, that brief moment of, like, spontaneous, like, freedom. And they're probably going to be searching for that together as the series goes on.
You know you're going to hate me for this. You're really going to fucking hate me for this. I'm so sorry, Doc. But let me evoke Phantom from our past. No, here's the thing, right? Here's the thing. You know exactly where I'm going with this. But as I've always said, that show, bad as it was, had promise. The idea, you know, of two people being caught, one of them, coincidentally as it happens, you know, completely outside his own choice, he's been dragged into this, trying to find freedom and becoming normal, quote-unquote, people again. That's an appealing narrative. That is a very appealing narrative. So I can see where they're going with this in Banana Fish, and that's already doing what the show failed to do. So I'm genuinely quite impressed with how it's been going so far, which will actually lead to some of my talking points in a second.
All right. Well then.
Next point.
Well then,
go for it.
It was literally just a second. So I was potentially going to bring this up last time, but I think it's worth me actually bringing it up now, which is the fair warning ahead of time, by the way, that I again am a cishet man, so I can't speak this with entirely a full amount of authority. But I'm just going to offer my perspective on this, which is the expression of, you know, homosexuality in this show thus far as a means of expressing power and possession over. So, I would argue that if you watch this show and you had no prior knowledge whatsoever of Ash and Amy's eventual romance, which I've been made aware of, you would think the show was being pretty horrible in how it presented gay characters. Because all of the, you know, the gay men that we've met so far are criminals. Ash included. Now, I should stress, by the way, I don't agree with that perspective. I don't believe, you know, that, you know, homosexuality is wrong or anything. But what I'm interested in seeing as the show goes along is how Ash and Aji finally managed to, you know, break out of that criminal cycle and express themselves and their sexuality in a way that's not defined by, you know, possession of other people or as a will to power. Do you got, like, I mean, Marvin, for example, who we saw previously, like, you know, Dino stroking a cat, Arthur, etc. Like, it's interesting how, like, again, I mentioned, like, in the very first episode we did on this, that this was, it turns out to be true, it was set at the time of the AIDS crisis. So the demonization of, you know, homosexual men was a thing back then. It still, of course, is in some areas in certain respects these days, but not to that extent where the government was getting in on. So at the time of this happening, you know, expressing yourself as, you know, gay openly was not something you could do and be proud of. And the funny thing is, the people who are doing it or are proud of it are awful, wretched people that, you know, treat Ash in particular like a plaything. And that's, and this is the thing, like I've said in, like, Franks, for example, that, you know, it did not handle, you know, setting up a bad set of characters, the nine specific, and then breaking that later with a counter narrative, like, this is how they've been portrayed, but they learned, or rather, people learned to be better. So I'm hoping and I'm expecting to see that as this show goes on, that Ash and Aji, you know, they'll be able to actually, you know, lead that relatively normal life that I said before. Mm-hmm. Like, not for the problem, which the show is wrong, because, of course, we've got the mystery drug stories to solve during that time. But the show will slowly but surely get rid of all the horrible people that we've seen thus far and their horrible attitudes, and actually replace it with, you know, our two lead characters finally living a normal relationship where they can just act like normal people for 5 minutes. So I'm interested to see how that goes and how, you know, the counter narrative that the show will spin as it goes along, which is going to be, firstly, of course, very welcome, because I certainly don't like any of the people that have been treating Ash this way. As far as I'm concerned, if they all end up roadkill, I'll shed no tears. But I think it's interesting the show is signing off for this bend, but it's saying, actually, no. This is not the way things should be.
I hope so. I mean, I hope that the director will sprinkle in some of what you're talking about, because
I'm sure the material does cover that. I mean, there is a bit where
I hope so. Yeah, I hope that as well.
I mean, there is a bit when Ash and Aji speak very briefly at the end of this episode before, you know, he gets kissed. Where Ash, again, like, tone of voice softens, says it's nice to see you again. Now, whether or not that, again, was part of the act that he was putting out publicly, it's a different matter. But at the same time, like, it's hints that things will go further. I mean, this is also about, you know, the kiss. Like, there was the pretense, of course, of passing on the pill. But clearly, you know, like, there could have easily been some other ways that the pill could have made it over there without anyone noticing.
Mm-hmm.
So part of me thinks that maybe it's an indulgence on Ash's part as well to finally, you know, express himself a little bit. And, you know, Aji didn't, you know, shy away. Now, maybe it will, you know, you could argue the argument that, you know, call for it, such as no consent, but circumstances, you know, explain that away.
And part of what was crazy about that scene was, you know, the cops that knew Ash, like, were reacting so strongly. I don't think it was just because, oh, here's someone kissing someone else, or even here's a man kissing another man. I think it was like, Ash Lynx is touching someone. Ash, yes. Lynx just kissed someone. Like, because he, I mean, we've seen how he reacts to people like, you know, Garvey, and even people he's friends with in the police for laying
Stay
hands on
me.
Him. Yeah.
Here's where you stand, here's where I stand, and there is a certain amount of distance. Good. Just reading Luther's comment there, that's what the thing is, I didn't expect it not to do that. I know that Banana Fish is well regarded, and any of that, you know, if there had been like the other version of this story where we didn't get to see that, and, you know, all of the queer characters were simply just criminals, scumbags, then, well, I'd take it to task, and people would have taken it to task well before now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's certainly setting up, here's how things are at the moment, but the thing about this status quo is it isn't right. It will be torn down eventually. We're just establishing at the moment in all the ways in which it is wrong, because it is ultimately, you know, possession. I mean, would it be reasonable for me to say, as much as I don't want it to be true, that Ash was raped by Garvey?
Oh, without question, I would say.
I would say so. Now, I mentioned in our Berserk cast, and I'm going to clarify this a little bit, but to me, rape is one of the most ultimate acts of possession. Slavery being the other. Not that they're mutually exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, just so people don't misquote me or misunderstand the conversation, absolutely awful. Like, rapists, as far as I'm concerned, throw them off cliffs, you know, shoot them into the sun. Fuck the lot of them. You act in that way where you treat someone like meat. You don't deserve, you know, a life. You don't deserve to be able to live. Put them in the cell. No sunlight. Fuck the lot of them. Just so I cleared that up. But, like, this is the reason why we've seen so many times that, you know, people like Ash is described as a doll. The cat that Dino has before. Like, I mean, Ash himself is a cat, like, you know, described like cat-like terms. Aslan, Lynx, etc., etc. The comparisons are there. People are using gay sexuality in this at the moment, and wrongly, the show's certainly not sympathizing with them, as a means of possession, as a means of control, a means of exerting their will. This was the same thing in American History X with that particular scene, ironically, by Nazis. So, yeah, I'm interested to see how this goes. I mean, I don't doubt it'll go in the way that, you know, I say unravels and destroys this current state of affairs, but the show's very clearly saying its cards on the table, right? Here's these bunch of people. They're awful. Well, they're not awful because they're gay. They're awful because they're just generally awful people expressing that way. And the other interesting thing that I should mention is that Ash himself is not being allowed to express his sexuality either.
Right.
Like, he can't do that currently. It's kind of a hypocrisy in this that, okay, yeah, they're doing it, and they're doing it without consent of people, of course. That's wretched and terrible. But Ash himself can't have a normal, you know, relationship with someone, a normal gay relationship. Like, can you imagine this, right? Like, Marvin, could you ever imagine him having a normal relationship? No. Like, Marvin coming home, like, you know, and then there's just studio laughter as he puts his hat on the book on the nightstand. Hello, no. Dave, I'm back. No, it ain't happening. No. Because he's a dick.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, right? It's an hypocrisy, Marion, that they wouldn't allow Ash to have a regular relationship with someone, be it AJ or anyone else. So they get to act as they please. But he can't. And eventually, that'll, of course, be undone. So I just found it interesting, again, it's continued to set up this power play here through sexuality. And it'll be a good day when we see Dino and his others, you know, just cold cocks.
So, you've provided a great segue to my
next point.
To my next point. I will be very interested, I think, to see if... How do I phrase this? If there's some kind of epiphany type moment for Ash when he maybe thinks to himself, boy, I've been treating Aji to a little bit lesser of a degree, but into the same kind of way that Dino and his people treated me. Like, and I say that only because, like, they're so early on in their relationship, and I don't doubt that there's attraction and even maybe a degree of affection there, but right now it seems like he's cuddling up to Aji and sees Aji as, like, a way out. You know what I mean? Like, he's sort of employing him as a tool, like, okay, here's this kid that Dino won't be keeping tabs on necessarily. You know, he guesses wrong about that, but... you know, that's the thought process. Like, I need this kid. I need to rely on him to get out of here, or not to get out of here, but to make sure that Meredith and my brother are safe. And
so
I wonder.
Ash is seeing AG purely in terms of functionality. Is what you can do for me right now in terms of, you know, very pragmatic things, getting the message out there, for example.
Yes, yeah. I wonder if that will continue, you know what I mean? Or if or their relationship will become genuine very quickly, or deepen, you know, or what have you. But it certainly does, or it can easily appear from the outside of this hardened criminal using this poor naive kid, you know, who's clearly taken with him. And I think, you know, as they continue together, you know, will he have a moment of, God, you know, I've just been using you, but like now I actually care about you and I don't want to do to you,
you know,
what's been done to me. And you know, it, again, it, in an emotional sort of way, not in a physical way. I don't think that it's going to go there. But
you know, you've just given me a thought. Now, this is speculation on my part. And if this does actually happen as I describe it in the manga, then because I've not read it, please don't spoil it for me. Like, I would rather be surprised by it. But I am imagining that it, like, let's say that, you know, after Ash gets out, things do develop relatively normally for the pair of them as a couple. Obviously something they won't broadcast, probably, just for the sake of, you know, the context of, you know, the crime and the, of course, the drug shit going on. But imagine this, right? Like, Ash has been possessed and used all his life. We know this now. Like, we've seen the pornography. We've seen, well, frankly, not see it directly. But you get my point. So imagine, like, you know, if he starts, you know, cozying up to AJ, and then he got forceful very quickly, because that's all he's known. Like, he only entered, like, he joined, like, Dino, not for his own will, when he was 11. So his life, like, you learn from that. You learn, unfortunately, you know, that, okay, I have been used, controlled. I've had no say in any of this. Why should I let, now that I'm in command, now that I'm in control, why should I let, you know, why should I do any different? This is what everyone's done. This is the law of the land. This is the way the world works. But he'll think that, and maybe he will physically, you know, have like AG by the shoulder or something like that and not give him a moment to move. But then he'll stop. He'll check himself. He'll correct himself. And he'll realize, no, the life I've lived, the way I've been treated, is not something I should inflict on anyone else. Like, to me, stories about humanity, and which is pretty much every story, really, that's worth a damn, it's okay to make mistakes. Or rather, it's okay to be in the process of making a mistake or being about to make one and then stopping yourself. Like, people are not born virtuous flower children. They're not born with, you know, hard set codes of morality in their head. They learn, usually by fucking up. I mean, I said this in Frank's, but unfortunately Frank's never allowed his characters to really fuck up. So, hey, there we go. But that being said, like, you know, if something like that happened, I can see it. I can see it. And I hope, like, that at least Banana Fish does, you know, take on that message and bring it forward, that, you know, okay, you come from a bad place. And, you know, a bit messed up. But it doesn't mean you can't learn to be better. It doesn't mean you can't, you know, ignore the teachings of, indirectly as they were, that have come from the people, you know, who've done that to you and realize I should not inflict the same on others. You can still have a heart. So, whew, Jesus, the nuance in this man's game. Like, I'm glad to be talking about these terms, but it's like, it's also very raw, which, like, I have to stress, I'm probably not as well equipped, like, as other people to discuss this kind of subject matter, particularly because it's about homosexual issue and homosexual power play in criminal organization. So I apologize if I'm coming across coarsely here or, you know, possibly not as refined as I should be about the subject matter. But I'm only speaking about this out of fondness because so far I'm genuinely impressed with everything this show is doing. It has a clear structure and a clear game plan. And if it is, you know, demonizing characters for being homosexual, it's because they are awful people and not simply because they are homosexual, which is good. That's the way it should be.
Yeah, we mentioned this before that, you know, be on the lookout for coding and subtextual elements. And we hope that you all will help us along and point those out to us if we miss them.
For sure, absolutely.
But do you, all right, on to your second point.
Next point.
Right, second point for me. I'm going to talk about Max for a second here. Like,
okay.
Max, like, you know, like, he's actually become more of a main character than I realize because he's got his own burden now with how things have gone down there, and I'll be interested to see him come back. I mean, I'm struggling to think here. But
how about that, the look Max gave him? before he flashed back,
Oh my god, yeah.
When he said he looked at him like his brother, but like it just was staring at him, not talking, just like a straight, like cold,
PTSD,
like
perhaps.
I see you as a thing, not as a person.
Yeah.
It's like, damn, man. Whew.
That was a difficult scene to watch, I must admit. Like, he was seeing his brother there, like, because, again, like, Max, he saw his friends, his comrades get gunned down out of nowhere. And sure, Griffin had the mitigating circumstance in that he was completely hopped up on this unknown, military super drug, Valkyr, basically, from Max Payne.
Valkyr.
No, really, it's like, honestly, Banana Fish is turning out to be practically the same thing. But you cannot, I would understand, although I wouldn't agree with him, if he also felt there was a certain amount of guilt to be laid at Griffin's feet as well. So that's hence him lashing out there. Indeed, that whole scene between him and Ash where they learn the truths about each other and who they really are. And they're just two men in a cell, who they're pent up anger but on both parts. Like, my brother's a vegetable now, basically. There's nothing left. He's been destroyed by something I don't understand for no adequately good reason. I mean, like, Salinger himself, did he not mention, for example, in the actual novel, about just generally about the trauma of war coming back from it?
Oh, yes.
Like, the drug, is a fill-in and all that, but it's not reasonable to say that Griffin would have come back from that anyway without some sort of scars, mental or otherwise. Yeah, I'm keeping an eye on Max, so I'm hoping that he comes back to do some more stuff, because he clearly has an arc of his own that he's going through here, a conscience that needs to be, unburdened. He needs to come to proper terms with the events that he saw in the wreck, and also what it means for Ash. Like, he originally just wanted to protect Ash because he was asked to. Like, I'll do you a favor while I'm in it, I might as well. I'm curious how that will recontextualize their relationship. And again, I was interested just also, he came across very soft mannerisms, and I don't think that, he offered the greatest protection, or at least the greatest deterrent. But there's certainly more to him than that, so we'll see how he plays a factor, but I'm definitely someone to keep an eye out for as the show progresses.
Absolutely. So I guess now it's on me.
Next point.
You volleyed the tennis ball back to me.
Ba-dum.
So, yeah. So I too was going to talk about that, I'll use my backup point and address the repentance part.
When
Ash says that he's not going to, that he just has never repented before, and he never will, it seems. This is interesting. I think that this is gives us a lot of insight into his character. His life has been such that he is not one for forgiveness or second chances, that you make your decisions and you live with the consequences, and whatever they are, life will roll on, but there's no space for allowing people second chances for their mistakes. You're going to get killed. You're going to get stabbed in the back. You'll get betrayed. You'll get killed. This makes me wonder if later on he will make some kind of awful mistake, or Eiji will seem like do something that seems like where Ash feels betrayed, and that there will be some sort of forgiveness or repentance on Ash's part involved, like if he'll have to do that for the first time. And boy, that will be traumatic. And I mean, not just, and this all, the gang stuff is one element of it, but he's a person who's been treated like a doll, sexually abused for a huge part of their life. I mean, I can see him not having the capacity for forgiveness and thinking that people in general aren't to be trusted. People will use you and exploit you. And, look what has happened to his brother. Like,
yeah,
I mean, the world is just a cruel place, I think, and he's looking for the opportunity to stick the knife in the world, you know, for fucking him over. Whether that's mm-hmm. Marvin, Dino, Garvey, whoever. And yeah, I do wonder if there will have to be some sort of repentance on his part, or he will have to accept repentance from Adri, and what that will look like.
I'm with you on that. I mean, I admittedly, you know, skipped Sunday school a couple of times, by which I mean all of the times. So forgive me for asking this, Doc, but you are yourself a Christian, I believe. Is that correct?
Facebook status, it's complicated.
Fair enough. well, just to refresh my memory.
Gosh. It's a lapsed Catholic, bad Catholic kind of. Yeah, so ish. It's complicated. Okay. Anyway.
Well,
please continue.
Just to refresh my memory, Jesus himself repents on the cross. Or am I misremembering?
No, he did. No, so Christ did not, because there was not need for him to repent, because he did not sin. He forgave the people that were killing him.
That's the thing I was saying. I was trying to pull back a tenuous link to, you know,
more of that there, the Christ figure. Yeah.
I was trying. I was like, you can't see it, folks, but like just over this direction here, like out of the way, I've got this like little cork board up with like pictures of the various characters,
red
and, like,
string.
Red string everywhere, pins, the whole shebang. But, well, fair enough then. So, right, third talking point. Like, man, let's talk about AG.
Okay.
So, didn't really have a lot of presence in this episode, but he did, certainly did come into his own in the end, because this is, again, his agency kicking in here. I mean, could you imagine him otherwise, after having done this for, let's say Max... Let's just hypothesize it. Let's say Max, like, randomly just said to him, by the way, go drop this off somewhere. He probably wouldn't have done it. But I reckon, again, that Ash is, you know, because of his presence and his charisma, has inspired him to do it. But I'm actually thinking, you know how I've said previously about how, like, the characters will meet somewhere in the middle in terms of, like, you know, how they change, like, Adri will hard and Ash will soften, like, you know, he'll lay his guard down a bit, Adri will bring his up, he'll become more world-wise. I wonder, like, how I've said before, like, about how Ash might overextend himself. What about AJ? Like, what could potentially happen to him as he gets involved in this criminal underworld? Like, I think, personally speaking, that there are certain things that he needs to learn about life and the world. I mean, the inconspicuous thing, quote-unquote, you know, like, where he stood out like, you know, a Christmas tree in the middle of July. I mean, he, you know, he needs to become a little more world-wise and have a little more street smart and common sense. But at the same time, I would never ever want, you know, him to go so far as to go join criminal organization or become a criminal himself, even if it was just minor stuff. I mean, we've seen him hold Ash's gun, wink, nudge, etc., etc., before. Is he going to hold it again? If he does hold it again, is he going to have someone's life in his hand? Would he then take that? What would that mean to him? Like, what would the context of that be? Like, would he have to shoot someone to save Ash's life? If he did, how would he deal with that? I mean, for all the talk of Ash, either AJ, I would argue, is one as well, in that he's made of porcelain, he's fragile. Hmm. Like, there's, like, this experience that he's going to go through as time goes on, dealing with this person who's entered his life, who he's very fascinated and probably, I say, attracted to. Like, what is the price he's going to pay in terms of his innocence and his soul as this goes on? Will he still come out of the heart? And yeah, like, again, sorry to bring it up, but that show, like, you know, regular person living a normal life. Once he got out, so to speak, he then, you know, could never really go back, couldn't meet his parents again. So what will happen to him? Like, I think this is interesting, because, like, we've got essentially two different characters where we worry about them going too far in one direction. Mm-hmm. And that, again, is good tension on the part of the show for making me think that. It makes me think to myself, okay, I can see what's at stake here for the characters' souls and for their hearts and their well-being. I mean, we already have Ash, who says, you know, that he's never repented, but he's very clearly broken. Like, he's functioning, I suppose, but he's not living a regular life. He's constantly on edge, constantly on guard. Like, people can't get close to him because he's afraid that they will, you know, want to touch him, you know, and use him in that kind of way.
I mean, it's so funny, they said in the chat, you know, I forget who mentioned this, but said that Ash was a sort of modeled in some ways on River Phoenix, and it makes me think, like, Ash is definitely sort of self-destructive and appears to be, like, on a hurtling on a trajectory to self-destruction.
Sounds about right. I mean, at the end of the day, like, you know, if he's someone who's so determined on choosing his own path, if he is going to flame out, he will flame out on his own terms. I mean, I don't necessarily agree with that as a principle. If you have no other choice, like, at least let you go, at least if you are go out in a way that you decide, not because someone else says it. But yeah, AG though, like, you know, again, shades of his character's growth here. Small steps, incremental baby steps, pretty flawed execution. I mean, nice jacket and all, but you're not wearing that to go undercover, mate. Let's put it that way. You're wearing that for a night out on the tiles. He can't drink anyway, so I suppose he's just going to have to wear it to the mall or something like that. Or Broadway, perhaps. Maybe he'll go catch cats on it or something.
Oh, oh me.
Well, he's got to at least get some, you know, he's got to at least get some time, you know, in on Broadway or some of the sights of New York while he's there. So, but yeah, very, very interesting, and this is definitely to praise the show. Like, I mean, good cliffhanger already, just in terms of sheer, like, oh shit. All, like, I have a fan here, shit's gonna hit the fan perpetually from here on out.
Mm-hmm.
But on the, there's the long term of what it means for the characters and, you know, their humanity. Like, will Ash gain some of his back, and how much of it ages will he lose in turn?
It's very interesting.
Find out.
All right. Find out. So, you ready to rate the episode?
Yes, I am.
All right. I, myself, have given this episode 4.5 stars.
Nice.
Out of, no, not stars. Oh, I fucked it up. 4.5, 4.5 War Journal, articles out of 5.
Nice. For me, I am going to give this episode, I'm going to give it a bit lower than you, just because I'm still a bit squiffy on the animation choices at certain points and the tone it was setting with certain things following certain scenes. The actual material of this episode, though, was as good as always. Hello, Kay.
Hello.
Not to worry, the VOD will be up fairly shortly, so you get to see me talk my usual brand of bullshit. Sorry. but to get back to my rating, I'm actually going to give it 3.5 messages inside, you know, fake drug capsules out of 5. Say materials.
Wow, the first sub-4 rating.
That's still a really good rating for me. Like, I'm always very harsh on stuff like this.
I mean, that's true.
I've consistently rated stuff lower because I'm this horrible curmudgeon who doesn't like anything. But for me, like, the material was still great. I think that, you know, pacing again is quite fast, and I'm only speaking to myself personally. I'm not going to condemn the show, like, you know, for having a lot going on. Like, Christ almighty, having watched some utterly glacial shit in my time, it's great to have a show that is unrelenting in having interesting things to watch constantly. Like, if you're a person who values the function of everything on screen should be important, this show is your wet dream. It's incredible for that. But at the same time, not so fond of the all animation thing, like, you know, the chibi-related banana stuff that followed the rape scene, like, that to be questions of taste and all that. So that brought it down a little bit for me. But other than that, still a great episode nonetheless. Like, the material again is solid.
Yeah, I wasn't as down on that choice, animation choices, as you were. And I think that we learn so much about the characters and their situations and the sort of atmosphere of the whole episode. I love that we're, as you say, I mean, things are just continually important information is being revealed. We're always getting stuff. If it's character mm-hmm. development, if it's sort of furthering of the mystery, the central mystery to the plot. Like,
yeah, the stuff with the drugs, yeah, the info we learned there that makes you realize is not what it seems like.
We have not been at any point so far just spinning our wheels, which,
no.
Oh boy, as you say, I've watched a few shows in my time where like half the show's run is just like, what do we do this week? The beach! Nothing! Like, you know what I mean? So, not that just not me being down on beach episodes. There's some beach episodes that I love. I know why you love them, and I also love them for that reason.
What, because you're a fan of all the volleyball in them?
Yes, exactly. Like sport. I'm just a fan of pure sport. That's right.
You are deep into fucking jet skis, mate. That's mm-hmm. what it is.
Yeah, I like the way that starfish are often shown in anime depicted.
I'm just a big fan of making sure, you know, like, I mean, how many times have you seen an anime beach that's been dirty? Like, they're all pristine. So I'm always on the lookout for that.
Well, that's thanks to Bando. You know, he's always there, always cleaning
and
beaches.
You complain to me about bringing up the shows of yore that are terrible from our, you know, our podcast history.
I can't help it. That was...
Well, either can I. So you can't hold me. So
you're right. No. Listen, one good turn deserves another. And Vorgalia, for bringing this into my life, Vorgalia, this beach cleaning shenanigans, like, you'll... I'll never forget that. As long as
should we give our viewers brief context on that for fun?
Well, why don't we just direct them to our episode? The Elfin Lead episode of What Are We Death Show is on SoundCloud and iTunes, and it's on YouTube as well. But it's not on this channel. It's on my personal YouTube channel at The Subtle Doctor. If you want to stay on this platform, but if you listen to that and the audio quality is not as good as in later episodes of our show, but you will get the you'll be clued into the joke.
You'll get the full experience.
And I don't know if it's worth it, to be honest with you, suffering through. But if you like to hear us rant and rave about terrible shit, then that's our that's like the podcast then.
Yeah, you could enjoy the schadenfreude of, you know, listening to us, you know, wail about, you know, something that we watched by choice. By which I mean my choice. It was my fault. I was ignorant at the time, and I am ignorant no longer. Oh, no, I didn't quite... damn it. We need to practice that. That'll be a great skit.
Gotta work on that. Yeah.
We'll work on it.
Okay.
That is that for Banana Frish. Frish?
Banana Frish. Banana Frish. Fridge. Banana Frish. Banana Frish. Episode 3. We're wrapping it up. We're going to put a bow on it. thanks, everyone, for who tuned in live. And
indeed. Thank you.
We appreciate it. Appreciate you all in the chat offering your thoughts. Always really nice to hear from manga readers and just kind of get little tidbits, you know, little tidbits of either reassurance or like, oh, you'll like how this goes, or, oh, they will address this point later. It's cool. I like this aspect of the show that we're covering. And
indeed.
And everyone who listens in Podland or on YouTube with the VOD, and thank you as well. We appreciate it. Drop us a comment. Leave us a thumbs up. You know, subscribe if you want to, and click the bell if you want to get all the alerts for when we're on. And Shadon over there, like, selling his personal wares or something. I don't know what he's doing.
Oh, that's just me saying I'm stalled. Okay. I mean, you can enjoy my ironing board with a strawberry on it. That was something that someone bought for me because I didn't have it. I thought, you know, it'd be rude for me to refuse. It's just fucking ironing.
Nice.
I'll get one that also, like, you know what I'll do? I'll get, like, some really cheap, nasty Dakimura pillow and use that as an ironing board mm-hmm. instead, just for next time. Like, as this stream of thought goes along, I'll gradually decorate my room with more and more anime tat.
Yes, I agree. This is something you should do.
I've got stuff in the background on the shelf up top if you can keep an eye out for it. But that's it for the moment. I'm living the poor anime life. I don't really have that many figures or mod cons present. But some point soon I will.
Of course, if you'd rather, you know, catch us just audio form, you know, if you don't want to stare at these beautiful mugs here, or, you know,
you would have to say that on the day that I have, like, you know.
Oh, come on. Stop it. You have long commutes where you need an audio thing. Again, we're on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, SoundCloud, all other podcatchers. You know, we began this thing as a podcast, and there's a lot of content that's there, but not on YouTube. So check that out. Leave us a rating on iTunes, help our discoverability if you so choose. But however you experience us, thank you for doing so. If you want to talk to us, you can always tweet at What Are We Desh Show and vote in the
Twitter poll.
The Twitter polls. Currently, we have two of them up. Mm-hmm. Was AG trying to be inconspicuous in Banana Fish Episode 3? Yes or no? Currently, yes is leading with 100%.
What a surprise. Truly, I would have never believed that, you know, that people would have voted that way. Impossible to predict. Never.
Our second poll. Should AG continue to wear his new jacket with one shoulder down? The choices are yes and yes! Currently, yes is winning. And if you would like to get a hold of me on Twitter, I am at The Subtle Doctor. Please ping me with all pingable items.
For me, you can find me and my zit at Shaden1010 on Twitter. Sorry. This is the thing, right? If I bring attention to it, no one can take the piss out of me for it. So there you go. I also have recently revived my Curious Cat. I brought, you know, Curious Cat, Nine Lives, etc., etc. That's now back, so I'm on AO. See? So, curiouscat.me/Shaden10. Feel free to ask me all sorts of crazy questions. Not about the Zitno, please. I don't know where it came from. Anyway, but thank you all again very much for listening. As always, it's always a pleasure to have everyone here and to be interacting with people in chat. You're all awesome. Thank you so much.
We love you. We love you. And until next time, for Shadon, it's me, The Subtle Doctor, saying, embrace each other, everyone, to the ends of the universe.
If your camera now just falls off because you accidentally bonk it with that Agrasuko figure and you're just like, oh shit, fuck.